Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll have a spoiler-filled discussion about a movie we think you'll enjoy. I am joined by my sister, and we are going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the Black Widow movie. We finally watched that. It's been out for a little bit. And overall, I liked it, but I think it would have played better for me if it had come out, if we hadn't had the pandemic and it had come out, you know, when it was originally supposed to, which was a year and a half ago now?
Sounds about right.
Because I was trying to place this in the Avengers timeline, and of course it came out of sequence. It was done after Endgame and is set, you know, a few movies before that. And it was a little distracting, but not too bad the whole time. It's about time the character finally got her own movie. She was long overdue for it.
I think that's part of my reaction to the film is I went in definitely with the feeling of this is a character who deserves her own movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I want from that movie. I don't know what I expect from that movie, but she's been so powerful and dynamic in all the ensemble movies that I want to see her shine.
Well, and dealing with the Red Room, I think was the right choice. It's a key part of her backstory, and it lends itself to lots of action scenes and stuff like that. This specific story with the Red Room, not necessarily something I would have anticipated, but dealing with that aspect of her backstory and kind of closing that off made sense, and introducing, you know, other widows to kind of carry on made a lot of sense. And I don't know that I would have picked Taskmaster as one of the villains of the piece, not the villain, but, you know, a villain of the piece. But given the Red Room is around training agents, that character is a natural fit because it's a character that doesn't need training. In the comic, he just watches somebody fight and can now mimic their movements.
Yeah.
So it's a good kind of counterpoint or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a pretty good job of staying true to aspects of the character of Taskmaster while going in a completely different direction on the backstory.
I had a feeling fairly early on when they introduced what had happened at one point, I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's going to tie in to Taskmaster, and if we're basically going to set up the big bad to have no empathy, to have just...
It's funny because when we first saw Taskmaster getting plugged in the back, you know, for the equivalent of an I Know Kung Fu kind of a moment, it felt like, I was almost wondering if they were going to go with an android robotic Taskmaster.
I did wonder briefly, is this an information download? Is this an android? What is this about? And part of that is because we've had so much with the Marvel universe, including the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show,
mm-hmm.
of so many possibilities for what they could be going for.
They seem to be considering the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show out of continuity, although how they can do that, I'm not sure, because it definitely played into some of the movies. But I was actually thinking if they were going to go with an android robotic Taskmaster, that could make a lot of sense and could really work.
Mm-hmm.
What they did here pretty much worked.
For me, it worked in terms of just showing how psycho the actual big bad guy was.
Yeah, yeah. We got a fair amount of backstory, more for Black Widow and stuff than the Red Room, but we'd already gotten hints of the Red Room and some stuff like that, so this all fell in line with that. But we actually spent a lot less time dealing with these other widows getting trained and stuff like that than I'd kind of expected.
I think I would have enjoyed this movie as a second Black Widow movie more than as an only Black Widow movie.
What would you have done for a first Black Widow movie?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But I came out of this thinking they could have named this White Widow, told me that Yelena was the central character of the movie, and I'd have believed them,
mm-hmm.
and told me that this was going to spin out either a Disney Plus series where the widows go to free their peers.
Well, and you had mentioned that possibility after we finished watching it, before we started recording. And I love that idea of a widow's thing, because you could almost do a quasi-anthology thing of focusing mm-hmm. on different characters over time and rotating them in and out. And I think there's a lot of potential for that. But the gestation of this film, even ignoring the, it took them so long to decide to go do it. But when they did this, it was so long ago, Disney Plus didn't exist.
Yeah.
The whole idea of Loki, of
WandaVision,
of Falcon and Winter Soldier,
yeah.
You know, the upcoming Hawkeye stuff. I really think they filmed the end credit scene probably well afterwards
mm-hmm.
to kind of tie that in.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's the only part that was didn't feel like this is what they had originally envisioned.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they definitely, in my mind, with the end credit scene, seem to be building to a Dark Avengers sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got, you know, another Black Widow, another Captain America. We don't know who else is going to get recruited, but definitely they're building to something there.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, I mean, the potential of a Dark Avengers group, if not a film, there's the potential of a Young Avengers group and probably a film and such. And Kevin Feige has had, you know, a vision of where they're going with all of these things through each phase and stuff. I think they ended on such a high note with Endgame at the end of Phase 3, although this may have been a Phase 3 film or whatever, kind of an epilogue-ish thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it was needed. I mean, Endgame really ended on a high note. And then the COVID delay to really getting this and the other stuff going for Phase 4.
Yeah.
Was already going to be a tough transition for the franchise, all the harder.
Yeah.
And they're doing well with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to kind of get back into the swing of things when we'd gone so long having two or three movies a year. And now we're just getting fits and starts of, okay, we get a little bit with WandaVision and then Falcon and Winter Soldier and Loki. And now we get this and Eternals is coming out. So we're getting a lot right now, but that's after, what, a year and a half or so of when's the next thing going to come?
Mm-hmm.
And having this be one of the first films, because Shang-Chi is the other one coming up, having this be the first film after that kind of a drought and stuff, and it being set back in time a little ways.
It made it feel very standalone and isolated, frankly.
It did, and I think there was a couple of things they could have done, and I get why they didn't do a few of these, that would have anchored it a little better, because they could have shown a couple of quick clips from, you know, when the Sokovia Accords were getting established, why she's on the run and stuff like that, and a little at the end to kind of tie into as part of the end credit scene, okay, now we've jumped forward and such,
mm-hmm.
and really addressed, like, okay, was this new widow, was she snapped out of existence and come back, how much time has elapsed, you know, all of those sorts of things. But doing some of that would have taken some of the focus away from Black Widow in this film.
Yeah.
But I think with the Marvel films, you've got to balance being the film it is and the chapter in the larger saga.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do think, particularly given the amount of time since the other films, having some scenes, even if it was just during the Marvel logo kind of a thing at the beginning, to get us back into the world.
Well, and instead of doing that, they indoctrinated us.
Yeah, we got more on kind of the backstory of the Red Room, the crash course on that almost.
Mm-hmm.
Which was handy, but I think they needed both.
Yeah.
I forget which of the films, or not two films, which of the Disney series it was, where they had kind of started by getting us back up to speed where things were.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking it wasn't WandaVision, because they didn't start with that.
No.
I don't remember if it, well, and Loki kind of started with the scene from the first Avengers film, which worked there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was part of a Falcon and Winter Soldier, but there was one where it's like, okay, you gave me the crash course and I got back into it.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm thinking it was the Marvel Visions featurettes or whatever we watched one or two.
Oh, and that could be.
And I know they've done a few on one or two on Black Widow. And I was thinking halfway through, having the new Widow show up in the Hawkeye show makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hawkeye was, you know, spent a lot of time with Natasha, as did this, you know, was Natasha's sister
mm-hmm.
of sorts or whatnot. So it makes sense.
This movie had such a fun family dynamic.
Crazy dysfunctional family dynamic, but yes.
Well, yeah, but that was part of what made it fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the Red Guardian, I think, was a ton of fun.
For me, he epitomized hero in his own mind.
Yes, but in the comics, he was part of the Winter Guard, the Russian equivalent of the Avengers. He was kind of their Captain America type, so some of what they did there made sense. And there have been times where they've played that group in the comics as, yep, they're just as viable as the Avengers. Other times, not so much. And here, they went a little with the not so much again, the hero in his own mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot of fun, and it worked. And building in that family dynamic, which didn't exist as such in the comics, it definitely gave this a unique feel out of the Marvel films.
Yeah.
And this is, what, number 24 or 5 or something of the Marvel films, maybe? I mean, there's I don't know how many there are. There's a ton of them. So every time they can go in an interesting new direction, you know, that gets harder and harder for them to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was some points at the beginning where, while I was enjoying it, it felt a little, I don't want to say slow, but more, and again, they were diving into the family dynamic and stuff at that point. I was waiting for it to get to the MCU action sequences and stuff. And we'd gotten some action early on, but not like, you know, we would typically get in an Iron Man or Captain America film or something like that.
The very opening bit in Ohio, I was going on the assumption that the younger child was Natasha.
I was too, because the older one looked like a boy.
Yeah.
I was also thinking at the time that I was expecting them to be in Russia in a kind of a sleeper training center.
Ah. Well, I was thinking kind of this is the traumatic event that makes Natasha determined to be able to protect herself and to develop the strength, which goes with the younger sibling, what happens there, as opposed to the older sibling, I need you in the front seat. I need you able to take the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah.
The older sibling steps up at every turn, which, I mean, it's great for both characters, but it's not and that's why this character gravitates to all the training, if you will.
Do you think that they intentionally led us to believe it was the younger child that was Natasha?
I think they didn't do that. And do you know why I say that? The bad hair dye job. I think they felt that the older child had 2 or 3 inches of red roots showing above the blue hair. And that was supposed to tell us this is Natasha's bright red hair that she is, for whatever reason, not liking as a child and trying to conceal with blue hair dye. Which, I'm sorry, at that point in America,
yeah,
children of that age weren't doing.
Well, I then go with either... And no disrespect to the kid who played the role, did a fine job. The look of the character, and I don't know if it was the casting or the wardrobe or what, I was thinking older brother, not older sister, you know what I mean?
Well, and part of that to me, and part of it is, I mean, obviously I have an older brother, so there again, it's the baggage I bring to the film as a viewer. But to me, I mean, I nearly called out multiple times to my older brother, what a good big brother. What a good big brother.
So you were thinking it was a boy too. Okay.
I was, because there was so much protectiveness and so much of the, I'm going to take care of the younger sibling. And not to say my older sister doesn't do the same thing.
Right, right, right. It's just a matter, though, of it never occurred to me that that could have been Natasha, because I didn't think it was a girl.
Right. Whereas the younger child was definitely a girl. The hair was more in keeping with how we're used to seeing Natasha's hair. And here was someone older and trustworthy trying to protect the younger one from having to go into the training that we know Natasha ends up with having.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff. So I was viewing all of it with the someone older, and I'm not going to say damaged, but who's, all, you know, that little bit further down the path,
well,
is trying to protect her.
It begs the question as to how much training and why Natasha had had at that age to be in that kind of a 3-year undercover mission.
Well, and that goes back to Mama Melina, saying that she went through the Red Room 4 times.
Yeah,
Natasha was taken as a baby, raised in the Red Room, deployed for the 3-year mission.
And then thrown back through the Red Room, yeah.
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 So Natasha knew when they tried to take the younger sibling what that meant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that makes a lot more sense now than how that scene had kind of originally played out.
But the way the scene originally played out was someone's trying to protect Natasha from going through what they've been through.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think later when they actually get to the Red Room and we get the hologram mask kind of effect?
That there was no foundation for it.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. The only place I think we'd gotten that kind of foundation actually was the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show that they kind of claim is not continuity these days, or Feige is treating that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it bordered on unreliable narrators, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there was no way we could have or should have expected that, because in this film we had seen nothing to set that up.
I never paid attention to if Natasha and Melina had the same color eyes, going back to a bad guy saying, once you've looked into your child's eyes. And then when we see his child's eyes, one of them is so heavily distorted,
mm-hmm.
exterior as well as pupil, from a major physical
trauma,
that it's kind of the, like, you're one to know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, didn't seem like an attentive parent to begin with.
Exactly. So it just kind of seemed like, from any other character, I'd buy that line. You know, from that character, it would have made more sense for me if he had said kind of the, it's clear you haven't seen Melina in 20 years, or you'd know she never would have said, or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, kind of a, it seems so easy to act like someone else right up until.
Even though you spent 3 years with her 20 years ago.
Kind yeah, of, yeah, exactly.
There's a couple of ways they could have done that better.
Exactly. Well, it's the joke in my household of, on the telephone, my mother and I may have the same sounding voice, but very different word choices.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with all of that.
You know, so when someone calls the house and I say awesome or cool, it's, wait.
Yeah, you're not mom.
Yeah. You know, but you do need a tell like that in a situation like that. And I think she would have had a tell like that.
The challenge with doing that in a story is setting that thing up to begin with, planting the seed, and then having it play out where it doesn't feel either telegraphed, overblown, artificial, you know, getting it in there kind of smoothly. And then do you have the character realize, oops, I goofed, or not?
And part of the difficulty we had, and I understand some of the reasons why they did, is we had never had, that I could recall, Melina talking to the big bad. So we had no baseline.
Really seen the big bad until that scene. So when we think it's Melina and it turns out to be Natasha, I felt, again, unreliable narrator, there was nothing I felt that should have led me to believe that was even a possibility.
I thought the big bad was on the airstrip in Cuba when the 2 children were taken. However, Melina...
Fair enough. You're right.
But Melina was injured, not quite unconscious, but might as well have been. So no true interaction between the 2 characters.
Yeah. That's one of those things that when some of the stuff is set up at the beginning, we don't have any context. That's mm-hmm. just some guy he's talking to.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Which is actually a fairly effective way to plant some seeds without telegraphing stuff.
It's right.
Just we don't realize the importance at the time.
But on the one hand, Melina had to be injured and had to be unable to communicate, because that meant she was unable to stand up for the girls. If Melina had been in perfect health, then she would have been forced to either let the girls be taken or stand up for the girls.
Yeah, and I think having it to where it was who we now know to have been Natasha at the time, protecting the mm-hmm. younger sister and stuff, set the seeds for the later scenes.
But it also meant that we had no idea what Melina would have done had she been able to.
Yeah.
So it gave Melina, I almost want to say, more flexibility 20 years later.
It did, but I thought Melina was the one who had invented the chemical agent.
She invented the drug to be used on nameless, faceless agents.
Right. But how did the big bad wind up with this pheromone thing? Was it the same kind of...
Pheromone thing was invented before Melina went through the Red Room. That's why she had it also.
Yeah.
Melina is just another of his scientists. And it never occurred to Melina that what she invented was being used on the equivalent of her peers.
Yeah, yeah. Or her fake kids in this case.
Well, but that's the thing. Her fake kids are her peers when you think about it in that context.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was another student of the Red Room.
Yeah.
So.
It never occurred to her that she was inventing things that, were she 20 years younger, would be used on her too.
Yeah.
And when you put it into that context, it explains why Natasha got her to turn and join her in the takedown the Red Room.
Yeah, there was some aspects of when the reveal of what had really happened back at the cabin or whatever.
There was one heck of a conversation that nobody could find the words for, so it didn't happen on screen.
Well, and I don't know that there was the time for.
And agreed with that. But, you know, one of the writing tricks I was taught early on was, if you can't find the words for it, or don't know that you have the most powerful words, it's the old trick of have the character answer the phone, and then have the camera move outside the window, and all you hear is garbled.
Let us know the conversation took place, we don't have to hear it, and then for it can be the best version the audience imagines.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that. There have been a couple of comics where I was impressed that instead of going that route, they actually wrote the conversation or the letter or whatever and did it really well. Because that's a risky thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, there were aspects of this that, again, I thought it was a fun film. Really enjoyed some of the interplay of the characters and some of the action sequences. Overall, it was good. I'm just curious what I would have thought if it had come out when it originally came out.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what I would have thought if it had come out in the sequence where it is set.
Oh, yeah.
If this had been between, what would it have been?
After Black Panther. Because
the guy used the claws stuff at one point. I was going to say, it was around the time of Civil War.
Well, because the previous king of Wakanda had been attacked and killed.
Right.
And our new...
That was Winter Soldier.
Right, but I thought Black Panther was right after Winter Soldier, with him basically taking the throne.
That sounds about right. It was around that time. Yeah. And again, enough of the films, it's hard to keep the order straight.
But it seemed to be right in there when they were doing the big manhunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think at that point, all the stuff would have been fresh, it would have played out better, and we probably would have had, at that point, a cameo or two.
Yes. Well, and there we go back to COVID filming, COVID timing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not just that, but post-Endgame, you're not going to get, you know, Chris Evans. Yeah. You're not going to get Robert Downey Jr. for some of these things, because if you can get them, you're going to use them potentially in other places.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because some of the things that ran through my mind while we were watching it, in terms of not necessarily relevant, but kind of popped out to me, you know, we had a scene with loads of gunfire in Budapest.
Mm-hmm.
The film industry is big in Budapest for action films.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other films do go there. But when you ask the tour guides, why do the action films mostly come to Budapest? They'll tell you it's because of the student uprising in the 1950s. There was lots of gunfire in Budapest in the 1950s, but people couldn't afford to repair the buildings. So they still have the bullet holes in the stonework. Oh. So when you come to Budapest to film, you don't have to fake the bullet holes in the stonework.
It's already got the damage kind of
baked
in. That's funny.
Yeah.
Tragic, but...
Exactly. Exactly.
I hadn't known that backstory.
They're like, so our tragic history is sort of a goldmine for filmmakers who are like, God, it would be so expensive to blow the caps and if we damaged the stonework to repair it. But there are certain streets that it's known, you know, do your fake gunfight on these streets.
Yeah.
And then
it's already set up for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure you catch these walls in your drive-by shots and it'll look like they got shot up.
Because they did just half a century ago. Or more.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like I said, this is a good film. I think She did a good job as Black Widow, as I expected.
Oh, I always love her as Black Widow.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a compliment or not. I mean, well, because I'm never positive. To me, she's a good character. To me, she's a heroine. But because of how the character started out, I don't know. I mean, she's a trained killer. She's
on a path of redemption.
Definitely.
Which she ultimately completes. So
yeah, and that's true.
I don't think an actress spends as many movies, as many years on the same character if they're not enjoying it or seeing something in it.
And that's true.
Because she was in at least two of the Iron Man movies. Well, yes, the second and third. Maybe three of the Captain America ones. All of the Avenger ones. I mean, she's in a ton of the films.
The character has a great strength. It's just, to me, it's always so easy to overlook where the character began.
Mm-hmm.
And only view her redeemed / being redeemed. I guess part of it, though, is I'm not convinced we've ever really seen her needing the redemption.
I was actually expecting to get a little bit more of that in this film than we did. I was expecting to get the what led to her becoming an Avenger.
Yeah.
And maybe end on the recruitment or something like that. And to your point, maybe that should have been the first film and this could have been the second or something. So.
Well, the sister character, Yelena, makes the point of you only got yourself out. I mean, you tell yourself you destroyed the mastermind, you assume you destroyed the Red Room, but you didn't circle back to make sure that basically your fellow victims.
Well, but I mean, that's the end credit scene of a first movie prequel to this kind of a thing.
Yeah.
That whole story, she gets out, she's joining S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff, cut to the end credits, and yet you thought the Red Room was destroyed, but oh, now we've got this helicarrier kind of a thing, or at least here's the new recruits. Oh, we've got the younger sister coming, you know.
Yeah. Well, but to me, there's an aspect of the character they describe as breaking herself free and getting out was somewhere between more self-contained and more self-centered. She was thinking about herself. She was not thinking about Yelena. She was not thinking about the others. There is a looking beyond herself to destroying the one who created the Red Room and ran it.
But you could argue it's just revenge and therefore self-centered.
But you can also argue that it's just making sure he can't catch her again and put her back in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, enlightened self-interest and revenge kind of mixed together.
Yeah. Which is why, for me, if they had done a first movie that was the story of her breaking out and her kind of getting to the end and being all pumped about the freedom, and then somebody saying, but what about the ones you left behind?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say stealing her victory from her, but giving her that moment of realization.
Yeah, yeah.
That she hadn't come as far as she thought, and she had further to go.
I am curious why they didn't do that kind of a film. I mean, you would have had Jeremy Renner in there as Hawkeye, just out of necessity. And again, why it took so long for them to start this film. I mean, I get why it took so long to release the film.
Yeah. There are so many people who believe a female-led action film is a non-starter. There are so many people who are going to tell you that you have to be under a certain age to lead.
Yeah, but we've seen Wonder Woman has done well a number of years ago even. There's the Tomb Raider films. I mean, there's a lot of examples of female-led action films.
Yeah, and I agree.
So I think it was a missed opportunity for them. And I think the end credit scene here is certainly, again, planting a seed, but just like that kind of a thing from Falcon and Winter Soldier, I've got no idea where to follow up on that.
Well, but honestly, I wish the end credit scene had been all of the widows, if possible, at the same location, talking about, all right, so you're headed to Australia for this widow. We're headed to Asia for this widow, and all of them taking one of the red canisters, each of them taking a red canister and saying, Melina's making more, and just kind of looking towards Natasha's headstone with a, we're going to get this mission finished.
Well, and again, that would have been the perfect segue into a, you know, coming soon on Disney Plus, you know, widow's mission or whatever kind of you would call it.
But just kind of a, in every sense, they learned from Natasha.
Yeah, yeah. I would have been more excited if that had been kind of the end credits scene, because that's a bit more open-ended, a lot of new characters to introduce. We could see more of this Marvel Cinematic Universe and such, versus this is implying that there's, again, the parallels between Valentina and Nick Fury are very heavy, which is unsurprising. Yeah. Both are agents. Well, in the comics, both are agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Here, we don't know what her agenda is. But again, the let's slowly recruit another team, that could be 4 or 5 years before that plays out.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. So I'm curious where some of these story threads come out next. And I know they've announced a number of delays for various Marvel films.
Yeah.
Recently, as we record this. And no doubt there will be some more and we'll get all juggled around, whatever. I'm just not feeling quite the same momentum in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that it has had for a while. And again, part of it is just the pandemic-related delays.
Yeah.
You know, and before it was very much, you know, one thing would lead to another, lead to another. Now we've got so many threads going that they can set some stuff up and it can take a couple of years to play out.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where it all goes. But I am curious about Eternals, Shang-Chi. We still haven't watched What If yet. That's on the list. And I'm trying to think what else is coming out after that.
I'm not sure.
I'm curious about the She-Hulk series when that comes out. And I know they've got a number of other things kind of, you know, in the works. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.